to all of that. Hugh McGahan joins us on a Saturday afternoon. Hugh, lovely to see you.
Likewise, Tony.
Okay, I want to get straight into this and we'll get on to your new role as a selector. Has the shop front, and I include the Kiwis in this, and also, yes, the Warriors, ladies and gentlemen, has it ever been in this shape in your time in the professional era? We're sitting back and saying there is more negativity, frustration, angst than the good stuff.
No, I don't think there's been another time like we've got currently. There's a lot of apathy around, disappointment, and in some cases anger at what's happened within primarily the Warriors, but I think New Zealand Rugby League in general. And coming in my role currently, it's even though I'm sort of on the outside, it's more as an advisor and as a selector, giving advice to David, who unfortunately was thrown in the deep end last year.
Mm.
But there are other issues that that came to play as part of the review of New Zealand Rugby League and what happened on the tour last year. And there was a lot to outside of the playing of the game, which probably affected.
What can we say?
Well, the short turnaround from when Stephen decided he's taken on the Warriors job, there was 3 weeks for David to put a whole new coaching team together. They increased the coaching team. He wanted to bring in some new ideas, which I think were great, but the transition within 3 weeks from players not knowing who was there to now being introduced to some totally different people changed the way the feeling within the team or the whole environment. And some gel to it and some didn't. And it was, and I'll say it's unfortunately it was difficult for David to really pull all that together. And there was a whole new management team put in. There were some extras that had to come on. They had never been within that sort of environment before. And it all started to build up. That said, that still didn't have any excuse as to why the team didn't perform the way that it should have done, given that David was already part of the setup prior. There shouldn't have been too much change. But unfortunately, there was a lot of change.
Because the way I view this, Hugh, is what happened with the Kiwis last year. In fact, going back to 2014, when I covered the Four Nations, and that was an amazing campaign, The way they played that night in Wellington to win the final, and you know the performances of Sean that night, where we saw the absolute dynamic nature of his play. Manu was incredible. The crowds loved that. We had passion back. We're actually lamenting. I remember the day in Christchurch, Wellington vividly, where we said, when's the next Kiwis test? Now I feel like we have a Rugby League World Cup coming up in about 2 or 3 months' time. No buggers talking about it. In fact, we're not even sure if we're going to get the radio rights because there's not the interest there. Wow. That's where it's got to, Hugh.
Well, that's disappointing. And yes, I feel the same thing. All we're talking about now is what's happening with the Warriors. There's semi-finals to come up, series. We're talking about the All Blacks. We're talking about the Black Ferns. We're talking about everything else. Chris Wood. Yep. There's other things happening within sport which are taking a priority, and a World Cup rugby league in this country doesn't happen very often, but it's on the back burner somewhere.
Yeah, I'm not even sure. I need to do some research to find out, and maybe the organisers will or won't tell me the truth around ticket sales, but it just feels like it's arriving, and everybody, as you said, the word I think sums it up brilliantly and beautifully at the moment, unfortunately, is apathy.
Mm. And that's disappointing. But that's for the administrators and people in charge of that World Cup to try and gather the interest. And unfortunately, the sales force for rugby league at the moment are the Warriors, and they just aren't performing. Which probably leads me, if you don't mind, leads me into the selection of the Warriors team for this week. And Sean Johnson playing. I don't think Sean Johnson needs to play. He doesn't need to prove anything. I don't think he's going to get a hell of a lot of match fitness because once they finish, he's got another 6 weeks off before he does anything. I think they're risking him. Now, whether it's because they wanted to build up some interest for next year and finish on a winning note, well, that I can understand. But I think the risk towards Sean, who is an integral part of the Kiwi team, I think he should probably be in football.
Absolutely, Hugh McGann, agree with you. Well, I've been having this debate with Warriors fans all week, both online and in person as well. And I was, you know, at the gym on Friday morning having this chat, and they said, oh, you know, playing Kieran. Why are we playing Kieran? Brandy Alexander, Greg Alexander on the program last weekend saying, look, has he done his job? That's for a debate as well in terms of Kieran coming on board. Bench the guy now. We saw what he was like the back end of that game last weekend against South Sydney. Mm-hmm. What I don't get here, and this is the argument I would raise, does it make a blighter of difference if the Warriors have lost 7 straight in 2017 or 9 straight? I don't feel like anyone's going to go, wow, they've turned things around because they beat Manly this weekend, 32 points to 16, Hugh, and suddenly we're starting to feel hope. I don't feel that at all. I think it's got to such a low ebb, the punters couldn't give a stuff whether they win this game.
And then that's all in around what had been happening with the so-called sale process that was happening. But to answer that, I feel exactly the same. What's going to be gained by playing these players? And if I can also say on the back of what Stephen was saying, that players aren't playing up to NRL standard. Well, we don't have players of NRL standard here. But at the same time, there are players of NRL standard not playing NRL standard footy week in, week out. Yet we see very little change with the team. And Stephen's going to be there next year, and I hope I really hope he does extremely well, but I don't think he's living up to a lot of the things that he's saying publicly about the quality of the footy players that he's got. Yes, he may know them more intimately at training and know that if he brings in some young kids, they're not going to match it, but give them some experience now. What are we playing for? What are the Warriors playing for this year in these last two games, if it's not to try and get some sort of combination or just see how these guys are going to fit in for next year if they're still going to be there?
And the other thing about the Huey as well is that we're hearing, you know, not broad strokes of statements from the CEO now, Cameron George, and Jim Doyle, but we're hearing that next year could be really problematic for this club in terms of where they get to, i.e. we're in this, okay, we need to start again and rebuild. So can we live with 2018 being another year where the club doesn't make the finals, and that would be 7 in a row? Is that where we're getting to at the moment?
And unfortunately, yes. But for me, I could go through 2018. If I see a change in the way that the players are, their attitude in the games, similar to what I've seen out of Newcastle in the last 2 years.
Brilliant.
Newcastle last year, yes, they were bottom of the table, but you saw every week that they were fighting to win games, and they didn't give in. There was an urgency in everything that they did. They lacked some quality. Next year, they're going to get some quality. If they have the same sort of attitude and the same sort of energy that they've showed in the last 2 years, they're going to be really pushing. If not, they will be definite for the top eight. If I see that out of the Warriors next year, then I'll have more hope for the year after. But next year, currently, given the way things are going, nothing's changed. Nothing's changing. Yes, they're shuffling some chairs on the deck with some titles, but there's supposedly some coaching changes that may be happening at some stage. 2018 may be another long season for rugby league people, Warriors supporters, Warriors fans. If there aren't any real changes in the way that they're playing the game and holding out energy for 80 minutes performances week in, week out.
Look, in your time, and I know the world was different, Hugh, and I get that. For people listening, the world was different. I mean, you guys still played your hearts out, but I'm just wondering here, what really gets me in the unknown here, and this is why I simply have given up trying to even think about what to do with this club, is that I remember going back to James Maloney. And sorry, respectfully to you, Bluey, but he said, look, the off-season we had when Bluey was there was just non-existent. We just worked on attack. Jacob Lilleyman, I went through some of the audio over the last 5 years, and he said, oh, yeah, when just some of the guys just aren't putting in. That was 2013. You know, Peter Sterling making the joke that they're ladyboys. They look good, but they're always a disappointment. And you're going through this audio, and nothing's changed. And I, you know, while I was away, I heard the audio from Roger Tuivasa-Sheck saying about guys laughing at training and dropping balls, and it was fun for them. Stephen Kearney coming out and saying, I've got guys out there who simply wouldn't front. My argument is this, Hugh. The time has come to name and shame these guys. I'm overhearing about who they are, and knowing, and this is going back to interviews I've done, and I haven't touched the Warriors over the last couple of weeks since I got back. What's the point of me getting Stephen Kearney on the show at the moment? Nada.
I don't think you're going to get a great deal of difference or change in what has been said recently, and that disappoints me, Tony, when you talk about what some players have been saying about the organisation, that's from within. Because some of us on the outside have been saying that for a number of years.
Have a listen to this. This is Jacob Lilleyman. As I said, this is September 2014. So this is 3 years after making the grand final. Have a listen.
We have underachieved, you know, the last couple of years. You know, we've had a very good roster, a lot of talent, but unfortunately with the Warriors, you know, that's not enough to get you through. But yeah, as I said, it's been a really disappointing couple of years. And
what does that mean? We've got the talent and we've got the roster, but with the Warriors, that's not enough. Isn't that a player admitting that we're missing that sort of X factor or that missing link is there?
And forever, the club have tried to import that by bringing in some players. Players have been at the Melbourne Storm or been at clubs where they fight week in, week out, even at training. What I understand is that Ryan Hoffman was tearing strips off the boards because they weren't pulling their weight. It upset a lot of people. That's why there was a push to get Ryan Hoffman out as captain, and that's why he lost the captaincy to the team, because he was upsetting too many boys in the harsh way.
Oh, boo-hoo.
Exactly.
Boo-hoo.
So then inherently there's a problem with the culture of whatever it is at the club at the moment, that there are certain players or certain people, and even new ones who come in, because they learn this environment, and so they perpetuate it. And if they're allowed to do that week in, week out, then what's going to change? Which dumbfounded me too when the supposed new buyer, Paul Davey, was going to take it, and he said he was going to change all this. How does he know what the environment is like? He might get some inside information from Peter Brown, who has players there, but it's not until you actually go in and find out what's going on, have a look at what they're doing at training, how much work that they're putting in. One thing I'd like to do when I trained Westlake Boys High School, and the director of rugby there, and what I like to do, I like to hide now and again at training sessions. They have an early morning gym session. I stand on the outside of the building where it's light inside. They can't see out. And I watch who's working, who's not working.
Wow.
And you can find the guys who are going off and hiding. They'll go and sit on a bench and they'll push a couple of weights and then they'll look around. The trainer or the strength and conditioning coach is not looking. So he'll just rest the bar on his shoulders or his chest, or he'll just hang from a bar and wait till they're seen. And it's then you know what the culture's like, or you know what certain people are like. When you know that that's what's happening and you change it and you start, you know, pulling some people out and naming and shaming them in front of everyone else.
And you do that?
Yes. We have a chat firstly, privately. If it doesn't change, then it comes out in front of everyone.
Look, and Hugh, I hate doing this because there'll be people listening going, oh, here we go, Veitch bringing up the All Blacks and, oh, they only drew the Lions series. But this is what they do. And I know, for example, talking to some of the players, they do get named and shamed in their team meetings. And, for example, I remember a story that Victor Vito told me about 3-4 years ago. He said he was called up, Darren Shan rang him and said, Steve Hansen wants to see you in the Intercontinental in Wellington, up in the room. He's got a wee boardroom in there, as you do, as you tend to do when you're the coach of the All Blacks. Sat him down and, mate, it was blunt. He said, mate, it was harsh. He said, you know, we've gone through your stats, you're not here, you're not there, you're not where we need you to be, we're dropping you. So we're going to announce, and if people ask us the question, we're going to say exactly why. What is wrong with that? Why can they do that? Yet we have, and look, this is not against Stephen, I really like Stephen, but to come out in press conferences and say, I've got guys that aren't fronting, and then say, but I'm not going to name them, I'm over that. Mm. And if it had been a one-off year, I could understand them saying, no, I'm going to protect these players. It hasn't been. It's ingrained in the culture of this club, and that horrible word culture has been used about a billion times over the last 5 or 6 weeks.
Yeah. And things do need to change from an aspect, but what you see with the All Blacks is that they have some facts. They have things to back it up. They don't say you're always doing this or you're always doing that without any real facts. They tell them the days that they were late, what he wasn't doing at training, what he's doing in his games, because the stats will tell them that. So they have facts, and they tell them face-to-face. And I can even see it when I see it on TV. I don't know the All Blacks environment. I don't go to any of the training sessions, but I can see when the camera is just panning around, when they're doing interviews and having chats with people, you can just see that the camera will pick up someone way over the far side who doesn't know that the camera's on him. And you'd see whether he's stretching or whether he's doing some work-ons on his own, just the perfection he's doing it at. It's ingrained that they do it. Even when no one else is looking, or where they don't think anyone else is looking, they're still doing exactly what needs to be done, and it's precise. It's exaggerated what they do, but that's what they need to do.
This is Graham Henry, who has been advising the club, by the way, unpaid for the last couple of years. Now, this is Graham, again, going back to September 2016, Huey, around his perception of, again, another finals campaign that was not made by this Warriors club.
I just think got a long way to go as far as understanding that culture drives the team. And I think what they don't know, they don't know. So it's something that they need to learn. Everybody needs to gain the respect of the guys that they're playing with by their actions, by the way they prepare and the way they play.
You see, they don't know what they don't know. And let's go back to Ryan Hoffman. I've had him in here, Hugh, a number of times over the last 2 or 3 years. He looks like, it's probably unfair given what you're saying.
He looks like a man beaten.
Beaten to a pulp.
Exactly.
Like, he comes in, the bottom lip's down. You can tell he's over it. I bet you he goes to Melbourne next year and gets back to something like the Ryan Hoffman we've known.
Yeah.
And we'll all go, well, what the hell happened there again?
Yeah, he came from an environment, and look, you use the All Blacks, I always use Melbourne Storm as a benchmark. And I know what happens at the Storm. I've seen them. I know exactly what they do. And it's driven by the people. It's driven by the players. It all started from the coach, who set some expectations. He set an agenda, and everyone had to abide by it. If not, then you are out. What he doesn't do anymore, Craig Bellamy, he doesn't get rid of players. He doesn't sack players. The environment at the organisation squeezes the people who can't fit in. The environment squeezes people out, and it's that environment is driven by the players. And I've seen it firsthand when they're having some social time, that if someone's getting slightly out of hand, it's Cooper Cronk or it's Billy Slater who'll go over and pull them aside and tell them to pull their heads in. If it doesn't, then it's Jesse Bromwich along with Billy Slater who will pick them up, order a taxi, put them in the taxi, and one of them will hop in the car and make sure he goes home. The players control everything themselves.
See who then at the club at the Warriors would be those people at the moment? I mean, I don't know.
I couldn't name any. It's all we'll sort it out and big hug around each other and hope we all get sorted.
I remember going back in the day, and I know, look, I'm just, yeah, it's fair enough we're having a go at the Warriors, but it got so bad at the Warriors under Daniel Anderson's regime because the players were worried about what the mags on their cars looked like, Hugh. True story. So this is the Henry Farfelli and Francis Malley were having a battle that Ando, as he was known by the players, banned mags. He said, this has got to stop, because I turn up and all they cared about was, oh my God, they're awesome. And, you know, the ones that go like this and the ones that go like that. Yeah. And, you know, all of, and that became, you know, what these guys were into. Yeah. And you're kind of thinking, it's laughable, but those stories are probably still there just in a different sense. iPads and phones or whatever else they're into.
Yeah. Which is disappointing. If that's what the environment's turned into, then that needs to change. And I said a couple of weeks ago that, and before I heard about the someone going in to buy the place, was that what really needs to happen is that they need to put a bomb in there, blow it all up and start again.
In Auckland still? Because that's the other thing people are saying, move it out of, you know, it has to stay in Auckland. I'm just playing devil's advocate here.
Well, in Auckland's difficult because it's very hard for them to get a sense of togetherness. If some are living in South Auckland, some are in East Auckland, some are in West Auckland, they very rarely gel together outside of the club itself, unless there's a specific event for them to go to.
Mm.
Very few of them would just go around to their mate's place and have a chat, or a group of them get together and have a chat, because it's so sparse. They're living miles away. You get somewhere like, say Melbourne, for instance, or even if they go into Wellington, you're not that far away from each other, where there is a bit more togetherness. They're strewn out all over the place. That's one small part. But Auckland's so big and there's so much more to do. There's other things. There's
and
other
Wellington, unfortunately. Okay, a couple of things here. Wellington live sport generally tanks down there because you've got such a community that leaves town, the government sort of side of things. We see with sport down there, Sevens is the prime example. Christchurch, we know, needs a new stadium, but eventually once that gets up and running and fine.
Take Canterbury, for instance, down there. It's close. Everyone's close. How far is it to go from one side of Christchurch to the other side?
Mm.
20 minutes? Half hour? Yeah, it's over an hour to get across town.
So when you say, and we'll get to a break in short, Hugh McGowan with us, former Kiwis captain, of course, these days still working with the Roosters, Westlake College, all of it. Anything you're not doing, by the way? Geez, you've got a few hats on, haven't you? So when you say blowing it up, do they look at what the Phoenix have just done, rebranding, or do they stick with the tried and true? It is the New Zealand Warriors. They're based at Penrose. I mean, I've heard people saying, what about QBE, new change of venue, even though they've got their training ground and their gym facilities at Mount Smart. Is that where it's got to?
No, you change the outside doesn't change the inside.
Right.
And what's inside is what comes out. So the outside makes no difference.
No. Okay, we'll get to a break. Hugh McGowan with us. As I said, I wanted to broaden this right out because there has just been so much written. I couldn't believe when I got back, as I said, the amount of stuff that's been written about the Warriors. Now we've got, as I said, Paul Davies out of contention, Monty Beath, and we'll talk about that next as well. I just don't get how this would work, guys. If you've got a thought on all of this, 9292, the question I ask you to start with, has rugby league ever been in a worse state? I'm talking about the professional game here. I also want to look at grassroots as well. I want to look at what Hugh's doing as far as young rugby players coming through. Are they looking at, for example, league and Australian clubs? Cameron McGregor, I know we've got him on the program this weekend, was saying from Auckland Rugby League, the kids don't see the Warriors as a pathway. And why has Hugh chosen now to be involved with the Kiwis? Because this World Cup campaign for me is massive. Because of what's happened with the Warriors, this team has to perform, given the fact they've got games now in New Zealand as well. We are spotlighting a whole lot of stuff around rugby league. If you want to text through anything you've got, 9292, back soon. Guys, welcome back into the program. Hugh McGowan is my guest as we try and trawl through the issues. Wouldn't it be nice one day, Hugh? Out of a billion interviews, I reckon if I went through the archive file that you and I have done since 2004 when I joined radio, I reckon 98.2% would be me and you going, Hugh, what the hell's going on with this?
Nothing's really changed, has it?
Oh, let's start. Okay. And I love Monty, and I do love his passion, and also what he's been doing with, you know, individuals at the gym, and, you know, get him off the backside. He's just turned into a champ, and I really enjoy the stuff he's done. I'm not a business expert. I don't really get the financials. It wasn't my strong suit at school. Still not my strong suit. I don't get how the public can own a club, and how that would work.
As they'd become shareholders in some way, but how that whole operation, and I like you. I like Monty, and I respect him for what he's trying to do, and I think he's trying to engender some feeling or get some energy back within the organisation.
Yeah, it's our team. That's yeah. Warrior Nation is the catch cry.
Good on him. But how he's going to do it, how it's going to operate, I don't know. And then once he does get 10,000 people to put in some money for it, what do they get for it?
Yeah.
What say do they have? How is it going to operate? Who's got control of that? Are they going to expect to have a say at the board meetings?
And some of the voices we get through here, as you know, I still get a mass of people saying they should be docked salary if they lose a game and all of that. Well, that's not taking into account of a small matter called employment law, Huey. You know, so are we going to have that at the board meeting? I raise that we dock them 10% of their pay for every 20-point defeat. Yeah. Seriously?
And then it's like a company, a shareholders meeting. They'll have their voice where they can be disgruntled and air their grievances. But in the end, very rarely will they get an opportunity to change things the way that they want them to change. I think it's more around having some feeling that they've got ownership of the club. But with that, do they think that they've got a say in what will happen? I don't think so. I'm pretty sure it won't.
Huey, why the Kiwi selectorial job? Because let's be honest, you have been a forthright critic of a lot of what's gone on in rugby league over the last 20 years, and I get that. As I said, you've been on the show a lot. I always go to you because you're not going to mince words around, and that's been inclusive of the game, which we'll talk about. I remember having a chat with you a couple of years ago, and you thought rugby league could become a wee bit tedious because of the structures around it. You know, prop runs ball up, go to tackle number five, boot it downfield, wait for a mistake, all of it. So why the Kiwis now? What was the decision that you felt inclusive? Was it because of where rugby league in this country has got to?
I think I mentioned before, I was part of the review of the New Zealand Rugby League after the debacle last year. So I saw some things that had happened, and David, I think, needed a lot more support around what he needed to happen within the Kiwi team. And I think just coming into this role just takes it a little bit further for me, maybe to see it through some of the changes that we have recommended to happen within the place. Unfortunately, we're down to one of our star players because of an incident earlier in the year in Kevin Proctor and Jesse Bromwich. That puts us in a real bother because of the loss of experience. But in saying that, there's some very, very good talent running around. My involvement is more as a recommendation. We don't all put in our votes, and whoever gets the most it gets selected. There's a lot to take in, but I think part of what I'm looking to do is try and make some changes in how they put that together. And probably only being the new kid on the block, I've only had one conference call with the selectors. I may be looking to make some changes already into the process that they go through in some selections. Because I see a couple of flaws, But that's not to say that the Tawhara Niko, David Kidwell himself, and Tony Edel don't have passion and don't want the Kiwi team to lose. They're doing the best they can, I think, with a structure that they've just
When you say flaws, when it comes to selection, because it seems a pretty simple process. Jason Tomalolo playing extraordinarily well for the Cowboys, picking for the Kiwis. That's pretty clear cut for us. When you say there's flaws, how much more complicated is it when you're saying, okay, club form, and we've seen this a lot with the Kiwis, unfortunately, doesn't always translate to that national side. Sometimes, not always.
Well, for me, if you're looking to play Australia, how are you going to play Australia? What type of players do you need? What do they need to be doing to ensure that the game plan that you want to implement is carried out? You wouldn't play exactly that same way against Australia as you would against, for us, Scotland. Didn't work out all that well for us last time.
But no.
So you change the way, to change the way that you play, you need a certain player to play a certain way for you. So if you have outlines and or an outline of how you want players to play a certain game, then there's some benchmarks that go against that. So if we're going to select these players, what do they need to be doing? How often do they need to be doing? Are they reaching the advantage line? After contact, how many metres are they making? Are they offloading in their own half? Are they offloading when they're on attack? Or do they... There's a whole raft of different things. Rather than selecting by opinion, I think he's a good player because we see him do this with the Cowboys week in, week out. Sometimes you can't look at a player that way. If he's doing what the coach wants to do and the coach comes up with a criteria of the type of player that he wants to win games, then we just need to tick off some boxes.
What about, though, Hugh, the players that you talked about before? Let's go back to your first 15 analogy, and we'll get on to Westlake as well. Your first 15 analogy of guys that aren't putting it all at training. Now, that happens, I'm sure, at the professional ranks. Are you confident that process in terms of finding guys that are going to, you know, bleed for the jersey, cliche, because we've seen Jared Waiwera Hargraves, of course. He was excluded. I want to go back, and I have to mention this. What happened the night before the Rugby League World Cup final those years ago where they were mixing energy drinks and sleeping pills, and I remember from a guy inside the camp who said, these guys just look like they're on a different planet. That's how bad it had got. Do you want to know that these guys actually want to be there, not just for the cash of playing in a World Cup, but actually want to embrace the jersey you were so proud of?
Yeah. They have to show that in what they do on a daily basis. They have to show that in the way that they perform for their own clubs. So there's some personal pride that they have to exude. For the Kiwi jersey, for new players, you'd bring them in knowing what you've seen them do for a Canberra or for a Penrith or for whoever they're playing, and then come into the Kiwi team, you expect them to play exactly the same way. If they do, then they have an energy for the jersey. If you don't have any sort of link towards that the jersey or for who you're playing for, then you're doing it either for money, personal pride. Yes, I can understand. Everyone does it for personal pride. But if it's not for the right reasons, as part of whatever the values are set around that team, then I don't see you being part of the team.
Then that leads me into an obvious question here. There are going to be players in that Warriors team at the moment that I have major concerns about in terms of what I've seen from them, work ethic, dropping off during games, which has been a common factor for this club. Do you want to, as Kiwi selector, and will the Kiwi selector go into that club and ask what's going on with these guys?
No, I don't think that our jurisdiction goes that far.
But should it?
It'd be through David, the coach. You know, we can express some concerns around what happens. It's not up for me to go to Stephen Kearney and say, what the hell's happening here? I don't think our remit goes that far.
But somebody from the Kiwi should be able to do that. Oh. As you say, David should be able to go and go, okay, Stephen, Solomon Okata, let's look at where this particular guy, Kim Amolo, where are they at? Why is Kim making these mistakes, basic fundamental errors in his own red zone, and it seems to be he's a powerhouse winger, can score tries, no doubt about it, but geez, he's making some mistakes. Why?
Yeah, and I hope David would be doing have those types of conversations, probably not as direct as that, but certainly asking those types of questions. Again, coming into the role, I hope that we can see some transition or see some transparency that type of conversation has been able to have. And I know David does speak with other coaches at other clubs, how direct they are, how informative they are, the type of question he's asking. I'll only find out in due course, and I am looking forward to it, but it's not going to be easy.
Righto. Hugh Begahn is my guest on the Spotlight interview. So much to talk about. We're having a look at the state of rugby league. We'll also have a look at the way schoolboy rugby is playing out as well. Really interesting story. In fact, Sammy, my little producer through the glass there, he put me onto this story about, you know, kids on television now. All of a sudden, they become the rock stars. They become the rock stars. We'll have a look at that as well. Also, what he likes about David Kibble. I felt David Kibble lost his confidence last year, and maybe a wee bit of this year as well. Lost his confidence as a coach. We're talking to Hugh about where rugby league has got to, not just from the Warriors, but also the grassroots as well. A bit of rugby thrown into the mix as well. Back soon, more from our Kiwis skipper. Guys, Hughie McGahn with us. We are spotlighting all sorts of things on a Saturday afternoon. Rugby league, the issues of that starts when you've got a club like the Warriors at the moment, the Kiwis as well. The Rugby League World Cup is not far away. As I mentioned earlier on, we're not even sure, and you guys may get a bit fired up by this, we're not even sure if the radio rights will be secured. They're charging an absolute bloody fortune for it, which would be hugely disappointing. Hugh, as far as what are you finding from young kids at the moment? So, you know, we're going to talk to Cameron McGregor this weekend out at Auckland Rugby League. Do you think they want to play rugby league for New Zealand? They want to play rugby league for the Warriors? Or do they look at Australia now? We know the scouts are here. You're working with the Roosters. They come over here and they just go, here's some cash. Do you want it? That's a bit simplified, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there are a lot of boys who don't see the Warriors as their team, and these are rugby league boys. They're caught up in the bright lights of the NRL, so they can go to any club that they can go to, or whoever wants them. Unfortunately, some of those boys also think that once they get over there, they go straight to first grade. They get all the nice gear. They're playing in packed stadiums, and they're training with all the first grade players. That doesn't happen. They don't understand. Just once they get over there, that's when the real hard grind comes out, and a lot of them don't make it.
Well, the suicides, Hugh. Remember, that was their four out of four Kiwi kids who had gone over there, and it's about, unfortunately, the tragedy of it is they feel like they've let their families down.
And the pressure does come from the families. Mm. The boys know this, and I see it in my dealings with boys in the rugby side of things. There are pressure that is put on by the parents. Some parents, there used to be the helicopter parent, the parents who hover over the top, right, see what little Johnny's doing, and now and again go and have a chat to the coach or in their own influential way. Now they're snowplow parents. They just come in and they just bowl their way through, try and clear the path so little Johnny gets into this team, and the coach, why aren't you doing this with my son? Why aren't you doing that? It's changed. So there is pressure from a lot of parents that just don't need to be there. And dare I say it, there's a lot of white parents who do that. A lot of the island parents or the darker parents, they're a little more subtle. They put the pressure on the boys themselves. They never ever go and question the coach, the island ones.
That's terribly sad, eh?
Well, it's... And it's hard to deal with. We're lucky where we have a fairly tight community where we are. We are able to deal with them. The teachers at the school are extremely good with dealing with parents. But from the rugby side of things, it's a hard slog. The boys are under some pressure. And then if they do manage to go off overseas and get a gig somewhere, the pressure for those boys to perform, now that they've got some status within their family, they can't let them down. And if they do, the family loses face. And unfortunately for a lot of those boys, a lot of the money that they make, they never see.
No.
Goes to the families.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what the stats are. We know, for example, out of American sport, Huey, that, you know, the percentiles of making it from a college football player or basketball player into the NBA or NFL is just minute. And I'd imagine, you know, it'd be pretty similar. You look at the number of NRL players, and I've always used the stat, the average lifespan of an NRL player is 46 games. Now, that could be injury, but a lot of the time it's simply they come in, spat out. Mm-hmm. That's it. What do you do after 46 games? It's a year and a half of NRL, and you've forgotten about, and you've come through the system, and you're the next big thing. Yeah. God, there's been some players that we can think of.
Yeah, and luckily a lot of those players do make it out the other side. They find other jobs, they find lives. But there are a percentile where it turns horrible. And we don't hear a lot of that, but we know that there are a lot that turn horrible. The support of the family is either lost, or it's not strong enough for them to continue on, and that's what we hear. We hear the tragic side of it,
mm.
But thankfully that's not a large part of it. it's more than one's more than what anyone would like to have happen, but thankfully it's still only a small portion. There's just some resilience that boys or sports people need to learn at a young age, so that it helps them further on down the track. And unfortunately, with what some of the parents are doing now is they're not teaching some of their kids resilience, because they're clearing the way for them. Everything's done for them.
Okay, I just want to leave you with this. Hugh, this is on the back of what happened with SBW last weekend. So I missed it. So did everybody. I had punters who were sending me the video of when he was concussed. I just want to ask you this. I got this from a member of the public. I see SBW has been named to start. I don't know what the international rugby laws say, but he's been cleared by the All Blacks. That's what they've said, re-concussion. We have a mandatory 21-day stand-down period. This is confusing a lot of parents, coaches, even the players, because they see an All Black going back on the field with the best medical care. We don't have that at that level. How much have you had to learn? Is that an issue here where you're sitting back going, still, we don't categorically know? I know Dr. Stephen Carra out of the Blues is setting up a concussion clinic, which I think is fantastic here, but still that information gap of going, do we categorically know how long we stand a young man down for?
Yeah, well, we do with the rugby side of things now, and certainly with North Harbour rugby throughout. It is mandatory. There's the blue card system that comes in, that if suspicion from the referee, they get a blue card. And from that point on, it's 21 days. The player isn't allowed back into any training until he gets a medical clearance, a doctor's certificate, and we're responsible for finding that. The parents are made aware of it. All letters are sent out directly to them. And they can't come back into contact until they've got another one to officially clear them. In the case of Sonny Bill Williams, those guys get so much medical care, it's not funny. So there's more information around what they can do, what they can't do, right from the time they get a head knock. Yeah, I saw the head knock with Sonny Bill and thought, well, he should be taken off. He wasn't. He may well have, even if he was taken off, he may well have cleared the CIA, got back on later in the game, or certainly be available as he is for this weekend's game. But it does send a different message. But there are two different messages for the young kids growing up, knowing the limitations that they can hold within themselves currently is set at 20. It's 21 days from the diagnosis. It's not 21 days from when you got the head knock. It's when you go to the doctor and they say, oh, yes, you did suffer some concussion. It's 21 days from that point. It's actually 23, so that some boys can't get knock on one Saturday and then 3 Saturdays' time they play another game, which means they only really have 2 weeks off.
It's getting better.
It's getting better. But it's everyone understanding that what we see on the TV and what we hear sometimes is totally different, but there are reasons for it. And like I say, the medical care that these players get at that level
that's the thing.
It's huge.
Yeah, it's huge. Rightio, Hugh, lovely to chat with you. Wish it could be positive. One day we'll be talking about Warriors winning grand finals, back-to-back World Cup victories for the Kiwis. I'm just going to say to you, if you don't select a good team and we bomb out in the semi-final, I'm coming for you, bro. I'm coming for you. That Hugh McGann.
Yeah, I expect that. Especially from you, Tate. You never hold back on anything.
It's been great seeing you, mate. As always, great to chat with you. And I do hope that we are talking, some positivity around. I hope the Rugby League World Cup goes well. I wish you well.
Thank you very much, Tony.
Terrific, bud.